Nothing.
We lost our intro.
Welcome to another challenging episode of
Revealing the Truth About Islam, broadcasting the light of Jesus Christ into the darkness of Muslim hearts,
exposing the life of Muhammad, exposing the errors of the Quran.
It's Revealing the Truth About Islam.
Phone lines are open now.
If you'd like to call and ask your question, call 347-857-1380.
And now, your hosts guiding you to the straight way,
Usama Dakdok and Christian Prince.
Well, good evening, and hope and I pray everybody have a wonderful time. It is a day before Father's Day, Saturday, and I am here in the state of Washington. It's my joy to be with you. I pray that the Lord will give us a wonderful time tonight as we continue to reveal the truth about Islam concerning the Bible. Has the Bible been corrupted? As usual, and it's a wonderful time to have with us Christian Prince. Christian Prince, hello, brother.
How are you doing, bro? How are you doing, everybody? I hope you guys today will enjoy your time with us and learn something new and good in the name of our Lord, the Messiah.
Amen, amen. And with our wonderful producer, Christy. Hello, Christy.
Hello. It's great to be with you guys tonight. God bless everybody. We appreciate all of our listeners, and give us a call if you have a question. This first half hour, we want to open it up for any questions about Islam, anything we've discussed in the past, or something you've wondered about. So please give us a call at 347-857-1380. We will talk a little bit about current events this half hour, but we'd love for you guys to interrupt us and call in if you've got a question.
Absolutely. Things happening around the world. It's been a week since we talked to you since last Saturday, and it is going to be a quick 2 hour, believe it or not. We already lost 2 minutes just to say hello. And as I always say, this 2 hour begin and end quick. We have not even got into this presentation, which I would like to move into it today in a little bit after the first half hour. And as Christy said, if you have any question, it's a good time for you to call us right now. 347-857-1380. That's 347-857-1380. And while we're waiting on your call, we will be talking the next 27 minutes about things happening around the world. So, Christian Prince, tell us, what is going on in the Middle East? Any new news about whatever took place between Yemen, Libya, Syria, Turkey, Egypt? And tell us all what you got there, brother.
First of all, maybe you need to start from Libya. It doesn't look like the war is going to stop anytime soon. And as we know, Obama exceeded, and he's not doing it according to the law, because according to the Constitution, if there is any war action need to be done, you know, the president, he had no right to go over 90 days. And 90 days already is gone, and America spent $750 million, and al-Qaddafi is still there.
Okay, but here's my question to be. Excuse me, this is not a war. Obama said that's a war of a non-war war. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, this is what actually, the funny, if you remember, Osama, that Obama, he was given a peace prize right like after a few weeks after he'd been elected. For nothing, he did it. And now we notice that Obama, this is what I'm coming in the coming news, that he is sending an airplane carrier in the front of Syria. Which means he might try to attack Syria. At the same time, they are saying they are going to plan a huge attack in Yemen. At the same time, they are saying they are going to send the troops to Sudan. At the same time, we are already involved in Iraq and Afghanistan and in Libya. So when the liberals, they present always themselves as people who try to do peace. Then I ask myself, why Obama is opening wars, which is, even we do not need? Like, why you want to go in Syria? For the benefit of who? You know? Why you want to go, involved in, even in Libya? Like, what do we have to do with this war? Like, what we have to do with it? Let those people, you know, fix their problem by themselves. Why you want to be involved in Sudan? You know? I'm not against protecting the poor ones in Sudan who they are being killed. But is it really a war to protect the Sudani? Because the Sudani, the poor one, they are always under attack and nobody in the world moves. But now, because what they are fighting over is the oil, Obama is willing to move. Because that area where the problems is happening is the oil area. So Obama and the liberals who were accusing always George Bush that he is an oil seeker. Obama is doing more than what George Bush did. He is going to war just because of war. Because the war in Sudan was exist for the last 25 years. And Darfur, what about Darfur? How come Obama did not want to move to Darfur? But now, because that territory have oil, Obama is willing to do something.
So it is a game of oil, and Obama should return this peace reward he got back, because I don't think he is honoring this reward he got. He's a man of war. I mean, he's involved in many wars. Even if the liberal will not call it a war, I'm sorry, when you drop bomb, cost all these millions of dollars on land, that is war. That's not love. That's not peace. That is war. And I don't understand why the media does not speak loud, speak clearly to the American people, as it was in Bush days. When if Bush had done this, it would be a different story right now. Actually, people would be asking him to be impeached, or maybe put in prison, or maybe just whatever. But if Obama is doing it, it's okay. It passed the 90 days, as you just said, CB. And he's now breaking the Constitution. He's breaking the law. He is a criminal who committed a crime for the sake, for the face of the American people. And I don't know when the media will put their heads together and figure out something is wrong. This man is doing something bad. And I don't know, really. Deep in my heart, I believe he's doing this just to distract us from the real war. I think if we should go to war, we should go in war against Iran, who are about to have the nuclear flying all over Israel and everywhere else they can go to do their dirty work. And he's not doing that. And I believe if he can get us distracted, that's my belief. You correct me, CB, if I'm wrong. I believe Obama is getting the American people distracted between Egypt, Libya, and Tunis, before obviously that, and now you go to Syria, and you go to Yemen, and you go to every Sudan, and every other country, but not Iran, where the real problem is, where we should do something about to stop Iran from having the nuclear. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, if you notice with me, Osama, wherever Obama goes, the Muslim Brotherhood, they take over. So I believe that the agenda of Obama is how to help the Muslim Brotherhood to take over. He wants the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Syria, because already he gave them Egypt, and the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Jordan, and the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Libya. And after that, the Al-Qaeda is going to have a new heaven in the Middle East. They will not be in Iraq no more. They will not be in Afghanistan no more. They will be all over. You notice that when he go against the president of Yemen, he's going against who? Like, what the benefit of Obama to go against the president of Yemen? I'm not supporting the guy, by the way, because all the Middle East presidents are dictator. And there's no democracy exist in this land, and we'll never have one. All of them, they are the same. Even the one who is going to be elected is going to be elected by false election. Middle East election is a false election. I guarantee you that, always. So when you go against the president, he's trying to bring who to be a president? Who is the coming president who is going to be, you know, what the benefit of USA? The benefit is somebody is going to be under the control of Al-Qaeda. Somebody is going not to be friendly to you. At least this guy, he don't have a problem with American, you know, doing their job to protect themselves inside Yemen. You know, what if tomorrow we got a new president says, you know what, you cannot pass our land. And he can do that, because the international law gives him the right to say that. When a president, he gives you the right to do that, you know, it's a lot more easier than a president says, you cannot do it. Because when he says you cannot, it means you are breaking the law entering his land. So they are changing, they changed the president of Egypt, and all of us, we notice that the one is taking over slowly over the country is the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama is not hesitating to say clearly that he wants the president of Yemen to go. And then we need to ask question, who is the one who is going to take over, and this is for the benefit of who, and why America is involved. Obama wants the prisoner of Syria to move and get out, And all of us, we knew that the president of Syria, he is against the Muslim Brotherhood, big deal. And they are his enemy, and he is their enemy. So when Obama, he's asking the president of Syria to move and to leave, he's asking the Muslim Brotherhood to take over. This is exactly what I see, that Obama is using your money, our army, to give power to the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East. So tomorrow, we as an American, we have to do with a new fact, or deal with a new fact, that the one you need to talk to, it is not the president of Egypt no more. It is not the president of Syria no more. It's not the president of Yemen no more, or the king of Jordan no more. It is the Muslim Brotherhood. He is trying to make them international power, take over huge territories around the world. And in case you don't know, the Islamic Party of Turkey, they are the same as the Muslim Brotherhood. This is why they are in love with this man Erdogan, and this is why he is in love with Hamas, because Hamas is a Muslim Brotherhood too. So what Obama trying to accomplish is a Muslim Brotherhood in Iran, in Turkey, Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan, Muslim Brotherhood in what they call it Palestine, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and Muslim Brotherhood in Libya. And then you tell me what is left. You will have the whole area under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. So he's trying to create a new international scary side of Muslim Brotherhood. So later he can explain to you why he is going to hire him in his cabinet in
the coming election. The problem is American people do not know what is brotherhood. You said tonight, in the last 5 minutes, the word brotherhood 30 times. But I don't think American people understand what is brotherhood, because the intelligence of Obama said that brotherhood is a social group, a secular group, have nothing to do with jihad, have nothing to do with extreme or Islam. It's just a secular group. What do you say to that?
You know, everybody who knows a little bit of Arabic, he can go and check the logo of the Muslim Brotherhood. The logo is...
Why?
You hear me, Osama?
Yeah, I hear you. The statement they have on their flag is what I do, and prepare for them.
What I do, prepare for them, your arm, your weapon, to kill them, to do jihad. Now, if they are just a group of peaceful Muslims, why they choose a verse is just about jihad, about preparing your sword and sharp it to kill them all. And the sign of it is a sword. And this is their logo. And you can go and read their constitutions. For sure, the Muslim Brotherhood, they have two websites. They have the Arabic one, which is saying things as it is, and the English one, which is full of lies. So if you want to see the truth about those people, take any Arabic page they have, and translate it in Google Translation, and you will see what they post in English is not the same they post in Arabic. So Obama simply, this is what I see, he is preparing himself to do the most he can to establish a huge base of the Muslim Brotherhood to control the Middle East. Therefore, they will be our future companion in America. They will be powerful in South America because he's giving them jobs. He is supporting them. In the same time, they will be powerful in the Middle East. Therefore, if you have any problem in the Middle East, you cannot solve it unless you discuss with the Muslim Brotherhood. Therefore, the Muslim Brotherhood, they will earn a lot of power, and they will be king, the main person or the main organization to talk to solve any problem you have. And that will make America under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. You have Obama in the White House. You have the Muslim Brotherhood. They are giving jobs all over America. He is promoting them. They are trying to convert people to Islam. They are controlling the Middle East. And you can imagine that when the Muslim Brotherhood, they are controlling a huge port like this with the oil and the sources, how much money they will have in their hands to control and take over America. This is the plan of Obama. He's trying, at least before he can leave, because maybe... He's thinking maybe he will not win in the coming election. So he's trying, before he loses, to do as much as he can as damage to USA.
Let me ask a question, CB. Do you think American people knew what they were doing when they helped the Taliban to be in power years ago in Afghanistan?
This is
here's my question. Because what Obama is doing today is nothing different than that what America did years ago when they gave the power, the weapon, to the Taliban in Afghanistan. I mean, isn't that the same thing today? We're doing it again?
There is a song, Osama, it's called Who Let the Dogs Out?
Yeah.
You know? And actually, if you study, I will give you the mic, Christy. If you study what those terrorists are doing, you will see that the one who let the dogs out, it was a bunch of stupid American in the CIA, in the government of USA, and they are the one who made them grow as beasts, and now they are biting us. And this is what Obama is doing right now. The mic is yours, Christy.
I just wanted to say that if anyone wonders if this was literally what Obama intended, if you go to my website, I have posted on the page called Obama Nation. If you go about halfway down, you'll see Obama's Ramadan speech. Most Americans did not see that speech because he was addressing it to Muslims. But if you listen to that entire segment, he clearly says that he has been meeting or having his representatives meeting with the people of all of the Middle Eastern countries, not just with the leaders, but with the people on the street, and they are going to help them accomplish their goals. It is clear Obama set out to do this from the beginning, and now this is the result. This is what we're seeing. I agree with you 100%, CP. He is doing this to build and create the Islamic unity with the Muslim Brotherhood controlling the Middle East. And that's what
but
he said.
Christy, I have a question for you, the same question I asked CP.
Yes.
When the American, because I was not here when this took place, when the American helped the Taliban to take over and empower them to take over in Afghanistan, did the American people know who are the Taliban?
Absolutely not. I'm just going to tell you, as the average American had no idea what was going on. And I'm not sure that we know even today who knew what back then. But we do know that we that gave power and we gave weapons and training to the Taliban because we wanted them to defeat Russia, who we viewed as our greatest enemy. And that was a very serious mistake because it is. You know, it's sort of like, you know, when you make friends with the devil because you think he's going to protect you from the devil, you know, you're wrong.
So my point is maybe what took place in years ago in Taliban is today happening in Egypt with the Brotherhood in Libya and Syria and Jordan and Yemen and all over this Muslim country. And I don't think American people learn a lesson from the past. And the problem is going to repeat again this day in front of our eyes.
I think because they did not understand what the Taliban was, the American people still, by and large, know very little about Islam. They're still being lied to that Islam is a wonderful, peaceful religion. So, you know, when the officials from the United States government come out and say, oh, they're a wonderful secular organization doing community service, I mean, if anybody believed that, I don't know who it was, but apparently there's a large population in America that would believe such a lie. And
I think you're absolutely right. You know, I was watching the debate last week, and they were asking some of these Republicans who are running for the office, and the question from the media is, will you put Muslim in your cabinet? And guess what? The answer is yes. I mean, the new Republicans are saying it's okay for them to have Muslims to work in the government of the United States of America in the cabinet of the president. And I said, Lord have mercy, what difference does it make if you have Obama hiring Muslim all over the country or have Johnny hiring Muslim all over the country? What difference does it make?
There's no difference. Actually, you know, we might have a Republican. He might be even more dangerous from someone he is Democrat. Because it sounds like they are fighting over who is going to be politically correct. You know, correct. We don't see the one who is standing saying, you know what, I am not racist. I'm not against anyone due to their faith or etc. But if somebody is saying to me that his religion is saying he cannot be loyal to anything except Islam, then I cannot make him work because he cannot be loyal to America. Very simple.
Yeah.
Like, why they have to be afraid? They have tons of verses saying in the Quran that a Muslim, he have only loyalty to Islam. No country, no flag, especially if that flag and that country is a non-Muslim country. Like chapter 5, verse number 51. chapter 3, verse number 28, chapter 60, verse number 1. It's all over the Quran. They cannot be loyal to anyone unless they are Muslims. So why somebody is going to say such a thing? Because simply they are a bunch of liars. This is why I don't respect those politicians no more. They say something. And maybe, by the way, Osama, they say the yes they are talking about. Inside them, they say maybe no, because they are a bunch of hypocrites. They were afraid that if they say no, the media will go against them, because the one who asked the question, he did it in purpose. You see, even the media is not an honest media. The media is a false media. They are asking this question to put that person in a stage where he have to defend himself. So if he say no, then he have a problem. If he say yes, still he have a problem too. So because the one who are conservative, they are going to say, what? Even you will do it? The same as you said yourself, right? So they are trying to, those who they are going in the election from the Republican. But if I am a person who want to go to election, it's better for me 1 million times to say no from saying yes.
But TCB, if the media hear you say no, you're not electing you're not going to hire a Muslim guy to work for you, then you're Islamophobia. Then you're extremist. Then you're not a tolerant person. Then all this political correctness, which I mean, I'm trying to find out why in the world the media are asking this question to the Republican who running for office. Why did it not ask the same question to Barack Hussein Obama 2 years ago when he ran for this office, or anybody else? Why they are asking this question today?
As I said, it is kind of a trap. It's kind of a way to make you embarrassed. And say something maybe is going to hurt you in your election. But now we have to study the person, the one who said yes, to see if he really mean it. If he mean it, I will never vote for him. Because, you know, I'm not saying that every Muslim who's going to be in office is going to harm us, because there's some of them, they don't even believe in Islam. They are Muslims by name. But how I know? How I know what is inside the person? How I know that one day he will not open his Quran and become a religious again? Let us say...
All it takes is 5 minutes. I always say a normal person, a non-believer in Jesus Christ, if he reads the Bible, in 5 minutes he reads some part in the Bible, he'll become a Christian. So is a Muslim. In 5 minutes he'll become extremist. All what he needs to do is just open the Quran, read a couple of verses, and he will be converted to the life of the truth of Islam, which is the life of Obama, the life of Osama bin Laden and any Muslim jihadist. How did these people become jihadists? They read the Quran. They understand Islam. They practice what Allah commanded them to do.
Actually, Osama, today I saw in the news something you might not believe. The BBC reporter in Indonesia, they found that he is a member of terrorist group.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I will post it. Here we go. You know, I will post it in the chat room for people so they can see it.
Yeah, please do that. Please do that. That's very important. I think there's a very important piece of information. The BBC have workers, their reporters are jihadists. Allahu Akbar. This is really neat. Guys, it's 347-857-1380. You only have 6 minutes. If you have a question, 347-857-1380. This is Usama, and I'm talking with Christian Prince and Christy Johnson. And boy, oh boy, here's the first hour is about to be gone, and we have not got one question from anybody yet. And by the way, if you're not going to ask us question within the next 5 minutes, then you will be whole. I mean, I hope. I mean, unless some Muslim really want to talk to us, we will stop our teaching. We have no problem to stop our teaching and answer any question or debate anybody. Literally, we will stop anything we do if we can get a Muslim to debate us on any topic of his choice or her choice. But for the meantime, if you're not going to call the next 5 minutes, you will hold your question until the last half hour, and maybe we will be happy to answer your question. Israel, anything happening with Israel, Christy? Anything new about Israel in the Middle East?
Well, I know that officially there's not a whole lot of media coverage right now. Since Netanyahu went back to Israel, I understand that they are having meetings concerning the pressure that's being put on them to come up with a plan for removing their settlements from certain areas over there in the West Bank. And I know that the Israelis are feeling very uncomfortable about the pressure they received in their meeting with Obama. But Benjamin Netanyahu is standing pretty strong and saying that he's not going to go back to the pre-67 borders. But there's not a lot of discussion. I mean, even when there was another incursion, I believe from Syria across the border, and a number of the Syrians that came across the border were shot at by the Israeli army, and there were a number of people killed. It was just like the shortest story. You just really aren't hearing much about it at all. So if you go online and search on the Internet, there's lots of news articles and rumors about what's going on, but you're not seeing a whole lot of press about anything that's happening there right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yesterday I met with a Jewish lady here at the church where I'm speaking the next couple of days, and she was not from the church. She's just coming here to the church to do stuff here, and as I talked with her, I found she is a Jew, so I invited her to come to hear me speaking. She said, oh, I have three, four Muslim, wonderful Muslim friends, and as I start talking with her and explained to her, if they are wonderful people, they're not Muslim, and if they're wonderful Muslims, they cannot be your friends. And I tried to explain to her the teaching of Allah in the Quran and the teaching of Muhammad concerning the friendship between Muslim and non-Muslim, especially Jew and Christian. And literally, Christy, it make your heart cry. Not your tears, your eyes. Your eyes will cry, not water, but blood, and your heart will be broken. And my heart was broken for how this Jewish lady reacted to my teaching. I said, ma'am, I'm telling you what's in the Quran. She is one of the most naive person. She said, well, I really don't care what the Quran teach. I really don't care what Muhammad teach. I love my Muslim neighbors, and my Muslim neighbor love me. And I thought to somebody, I said, ma'am, do you know that the Quran teach they can be in love with you acting? For what we call taqiyya, you know, chapter 3, verse 28, they pretend to love you, they pretend to really like you, they pretend to be your friend, unless they're ignorant of the Quran, they're ignorant of Islam, and they do not know anything about Islam. I said, no, I'm sorry. And she left. She left upset because I'm speaking not nicely about her friends. I mean, Lord have mercy, how dumb this woman can be, and she called herself a Jew. I mean, I would call myself atheist before I call myself a Jew if I don't understand anything about Islam to tell the truth about Islam. I mean, have you ever met anybody like this, CB?
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, I have a chapter in my book about people asking me, I have a friend and he is a Muslim. You know, we as a Christian, by the way, we have no problem to take a friend, everybody in the world. And actually, because we love everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. Regardless if you're, even if you are a Hindu, a Buddha, doesn't matter. Even if you're a Muslim, you know, I have no problem to take a friend, anyone. But if you are saying to me, your book ordering you, and this is your holy book, that I cannot or you cannot take me as a friend, and you are not allowed to do that, and you will never do that, then as long as you are saying to me you are a Muslim, it's mean you believe in this. Therefore, if you say to me you are a friend, it's mean you are lying, because he will go either, do you believe in this book? If the Muslim says, yes, I believe in this book, it's mean you believe in this chapter. Chapter 5, verse number 51. Everybody can, whoever is listening, go. If you don't like to read Brother Osama Dakdok translation, go to Yusuf Ali translation. It says, take not Christians and Jews as friends and protectors. Friends and protectors. Chapter 3, verse 28, it says that if you do so, you are out of the mercy of Allah. You are out of His protection, which means Allah is making a threat to a Muslim if he take non-Muslim, especially the Christian and the Jew, as a friend. Allah making a threat that the Muslims will kill you because you will be considered out of Islam. But there is an exception. You can lie to them, and this is what it's called taqiyya, claiming that you are a person who do like them, who love them, who is a friend to them, but as long you don't mean it, it's okay. And by the way, if there is any Muslim who don't believe us, we can support whatever we say in here with the proofs and reference. We don't say anything from our head. You can go to chapter 3, verse 28, and read the explanation or the interpretation of Ibn Abbas. It says clearly that the one who do take non-believers as a friends, and he mean it, he have no mercy, no protection, no honor from Allah. What does that mean? No mercy, it means the Muslims will torture you. No protection, it means they will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And your blood, your money, will be open. Anybody can take it. They can steal your money.
Amen. That's the truth. And, well, thank you, CB. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue our study on has the Bible been corrupted? So we will be back in just a moment here.
If you'd like to call and ask your question, call 347-857-1380.
Phone lines are open now.
Call 347-857-1380. Revealing the truth about Islam. We'll be right back, right after this short break. Welcome back to Revealing the Truth About Islam with your hosts, Usama Dakdok and Christian Prince.
Phone lines are open now.
If you'd like to call and ask your question, call 347-857-1380.
Yes, indeed. Our phone is open for any Muslim, just Muslim. And otherwise, we will be doing some teaching. And we look forward to have a wonderful hour of teaching concerning has the Bible been corrupted. We stopped last week at this one challenge, and we're going to hear it together, and we will listen to respond of it, and we'll go from there to understand a very important piece of information here. As Muslims lie throughout the media and through the textbook, which is sadly has been taught to our children today in our tax books, in our government school, we pay for that. Our tax money go used to teach our children. For example, it is a very important book. It's called The People of the Earth. This book has been taught in Orlando for the last 7 years, 8 years. And in this book, Muslims teach the Bible is no longer holy. The Bible is no longer the Word of God. For it has been corrupted. So for it has been changed. Believe it or not, in the same page of the same book, The People of the Earth, that's a social study book, it's been taught to a high school student, 16, 17 years old. And the same page, they Muslim write and teach that the Holy Quran is the word of Allah, never been changed, never been corrupted since it was written 1400 years ago. And your children and my children, your grandchildren and my grandchildren to come, have to answer the quiz, the question in the exam. And the question is, as it's written on this textbook, what is the difference between the Bible and the Quran? And believe it or not, for your children and mine to pass the test, they must write by their own hand that the Bible is no longer holy, for it has been corrupted, it has been changed, but the Quran is the holy word of Allah since it was written, 1400 years ago and was never been corrupted. And that is the biggest lie from hell, from the bottom of hell, to be taught by our tax money for our children in the school, government school in the United States of America. So with no further delay, here is what we have in the challenge in this seminar. Has the Bible been corrupted?
The revealed Torah, Psalms, and Gospel were revealed books which are extinct, whereas the Bible may contain some parts of Torah, Psalms, and Gospel in modern-day language translation in corrupt form. In the case of the Old Testament, it was written in Hebrew, but was destroyed at least twice by the enemies of Judaism without leaving a single copy, and was rewritten from memory, one of the sources of corruption.
It's amazing how Dr. Amir Ali come up with this just blunt statement. The Old Testament, it was destroyed twice. See, yes, the Old Testament talking about the Torah and the Psalms and the Gospel, but it's extinct. It does no longer exist. And the one we have today is corrupted. And then he said the Old Testament specifically has been corrupted twice. And it's amazing how this man have a doctorate degree. I don't know what kind of doctorate degree, maybe honorary doctor. He said it was destroyed twice without leaving a single copy. I think this itself is a comedy sentence, because you cannot destroy the book of the Old Testament the second time unless you have at least one copy uncorrupted. You know what I'm saying? How can he destroy the book twice without leaving a single copy? And then he said, but it was written from the memory. It was written only from the memory, which is one of the sources of corruption. And if you know, my dear brothers and sisters, as we're going to study in a little bit here, the entire Quran, no kidding, most of it was written from the memory. It's amazing how Muslims do not see any problem to rewrite the Quran from memory, but they have a problem to write the Bible from memory, which is, by the way, is a lie. The Bible was never written from a memory. The Bible was never destroyed twice, not even once. The Bible, the Word of God, never been changed. The Bible never been corrupted. As we're going to show you, if not today, maybe next Saturday, from the Quran itself, from the Quran, we're going to open the pages of Allah, the writing of Allah in the Quran, and we will show you that the Quran clearly declare that the Bible is the Word of God, never been changed, never been corrupted. Now, I have a bunch of questions. And if Muslims answer this question, then guess what? They have the right to say that the Bible has been changed or the Bible has been corrupted. The first question I'd like to ask you, CB, is when was the Bible destroyed? Was it before Muhammad, and during the days of Muhammad, after Muhammad? Actually, what do you think the answer from the Muslim people, CB?
They don't know. They have no idea.
So the first question will be answered, we don't know. Is that it?
Yes, but you know what, Osama, I want to make a comment in here. I'm sure you have your Quran translation, and by the way, I advise everybody, if you want to get a Quran, get a real Quran translation, which is, our brother Osama, he has a very good translation. It's called The Generous Quran. If we open the Quran and read the chapter 61, verse number 6, guess what this verse is saying, Osama? I don't know if you can read it from your translation or not.
Absolutely. I'll get it to you in a minute. If you just give me a second, I'll get it to you.
Yeah.
Chapter 61 and verse what?
Verse number 6.
All right. I already opened my computer here. It is 61 and verse 6. Allah said, and when Isa, son of Mary, said, O children of Israel, surely I am a messenger of Allah to you, confirming what is between my hand from the Torah, and to give you the good news of a messenger who will come after me. His name is Ahmed. Yes, indeed. Of course, you need the first part, which he said, he is a messenger from Allah, confirming what is written between his hand.
Correct. So what Muhammad he should do, according to the Quran, he should confirm the Torah. Correct?
Absolutely. Well, Jesus confirmed the Torah. Yes, indeed.
Did he confirm the Torah or reject it?
He confirmed it. So
he rejected the Torah. Yeah. But the verse saying he had to confirm it. The verse saying he have to accept the Torah. But show me where Muhammad ever in the Quran, the Muslim, all of them, they claim, when they, because people maybe they might think, Osama, that Islam reject only the gospel, which is the Injil. Islam rejects both, reject the Injil and reject the Old Testament, the New Testament and the Old Testament. And here we go, this is their Quran saying that Muhammad will come and he is going to accept the Torah. But Muhammad did not accept the Torah. So Muhammad even contradicting himself, proving that he is a liar again. From his mouth. For the Muslims to be a true religion, they have to follow what is written in their book, that the messenger who will come and his name is Ahmed, he had to confirm the Torah and accept the Torah. But Muhammad never accepted the Torah. Therefore, the corrupted book is the Quran. Because either this verse in here is wrong, which will make the Quran wrong and corrupt, or Muhammad is not the one that verse is talking about.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And by the way, CB, that's one of many verses we're going to be covering. It's a very important verse, and I'm just telling our audience here, this is not just one verse. We're going to get to at least 15 or so verses in the Quran to prove that the Bible is the Word of God. This is the first question. When it was destroyed, obviously nobody knows. How about the second question, CB? Who destroys the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament? Who is? It's amazing when you read the Muslims say, some of the enemies of Judaism destroyed. Some of the enemies of Christian destroyed. Does this enemy have any name? Who are these people who destroy the Bible?
Sometimes the Muslims, they come to you with Paul. But at the same time, when they mention Paul, we can show them from Ibn Kathir and Al-Qurtubi that Paul is a messenger of God in their books. At the same time, we ask ourselves, why Muhammad himself never said that Paul is the one who corrupt the Bible? And all of us, we knew that Paul was exist before Muhammad. And as long as Muhammad a prophet, he knew that the Bible is corrupted. How come an Abdul exists in Afghanistan today, or like someone like Zakir Naik, he was able to know that the person who corrupted the Bible, but his prophet do not know?
Well, it doesn't matter really if Paul was before or after Muhammad. If Muhammad is a true prophet, and he will know that somebody is going to destroy even the future tense. If I am a true prophet, I should know if something else is going to happen in the future, and I should talk about it. But he will go, as you said, CB, 600 years before Muhammad, Paul was alive, Paul exists, and Muhammad forgot to tell us that Paul changed or corrupted the Bible.
Because there's something wrong there. If Muhammad... If Paul really is the one who will do that, and Muhammad, he should, you know, Muhammad, he mentioned very silly stories in the Quran, correct? Usama, like the story of the ant, the story of the bird, you know, the bird which was looking for a woman who have hair no in her legs. So instead of wasting our time reading fairy tale stories about a little bird who worked as a pimp for the King Solomon, you know, what about you tell us about Paul then? If he's the one who corrupt the Bible, expose him.
It's more important. Absolutely. If you come in with the final revelation, the final word of Allah, the Quran, and you're trying to correct the Christian and the Jew who are following a false book, you should have at least four or five surahs, four or five chapters of the Quran to show us clearly where the corruption took place, who did it, and the next question, where? Where the Bible was destroyed. And when I say where here, CB, I have two questions for you. Where in the Bible and where in the earth? Let me clarify my question again. When I say where the Bible was destroyed, which part of the Bible was destroyed? I'm talking about location. Which story in the Bible is corrupted? Which chapter in the Bible is corrupted? And where in the world did this take place? Was it corrupted in Egypt? Was it corrupted in Iraq? Was it corrupted in Mecca, where the Jew used to live and the Christian used to live? Was it corrupted in Europe? I mean, which country and which part of the Bible? Can you help me out with an answer, CB?
You know, first, if the Muslim says which part of the world, they will be in their problem, because then they have to answer about what the other parts of the world. Let us say somebody, he corrupt the Bible in Egypt. Okay, what about the Bible in Syria? What about the Bible in Rome? What about the Bible in Turkey? What about the Bible in... Because the Bible was spread everywhere, so it's impossible to say where, because simply that will prove that they are liars. So they don't have answer for that, number one. Number two, what part in the Bible, right? Okay.
If they approve, which part? Where in the Bible it has been changed?
Okay. The Muslims, they cannot tell you which part is corrupt, and they cannot tell you which part is not corrupt. Because either way is going to expose Islam. I will give you a very clear example. You know, when the Muslims, they say to us, and you know the story that the new lies the Muslim come with, and saying that the name of the prophet exists in the Song of Songs. right? I'm sure you heard that.
Yeah, now that's a new history, because Muslims for years make fun of the Book of Psalms and call it a dirty book. But now they found that Muhammad exists all over it. Go ahead, TB.
But the point in here, it's very dangerous. When the Muslims accept that verse, because now when they say the name of the Prophet is there, it means this is a true verse, correct? That's it. They're accepting by accepting that verse alone, you know, destroyed the Quran. And I will show you why. The same chapter, actually, Osama, the one I asked you to read, chapter 6, verse number 34, it says that the one who will say the messenger will come after me is who? Is Isa. Therefore, the Quran is corrupted. Because if it is in the Old Testament, it means that the Quran gives us wrong information. This is number one. Because when the name of people, according to Muslims, is in the Old Testament, not in the New Testament, when the Quran says that the one who will say that is Isa, not David or Solomon. This is number one. Number two, when they say such a thing or such a claim and they accept that verse, they are saying to us that the name in that verse is Ahmed. But the dad he quote for us a name, it's Muhammadin. And Ahmed is not Muhammad. It's a different name. This is number two mistake. You see, already we have two mistakes. Now there's number three mistake. As long the verse in here speaking about Isa, saying he will the prophet who will come after me, he will confirm the word. And the Muslims, all what they do all their life, they reject the word, which is a scripture, which is the Torah. And now the Muslims are rejecting the whole Torah, accepting one verse. That is another problem for them. So three huge mistakes by accepting one verse, and the three mistakes will destroy Islam. This is why Muslims cannot accept any verse in the Bible. And actually, they made a huge mistake when they accepted that verse, because they are not smart enough to think deep before they open their mouth. And now it's too late. That's it. They accepted that verse. That verse is real, and the Muslims believe in it. And no Muslim dare to say this verse is not true no more, because the name of their prophet, according to them, is in that verse.
Yes, indeed. So far I ask you three questions, and the last one I have two portions. When was the Bible destroyed? And the answer is Allah knows best. Who destroyed the Bible? The answer is Allah knows best. Where? We're talking about location in what country and location which part of the Bible. And the answer is Allah knows best. Now I'm going to ask you the last question. Why? Why the Bible was destroyed? I mean, why in the world, as a Christian, the Jews, let's start with the Jews who suffer for their belief, suffer for their from so many enemies all over their life to be the people of God, as even Muhammad in the Quran speak very highly of them, that they are the favorite people. Allah favors the Jew over everybody because they were good people. Why in the world good Jew will destroy his own books? And why in the world good Christian who suffer from the Roman, who suffer from the Jew, who suffer from every enemy, why Christian destroys their own gospel? Why the Bible was destroyed? What is your answer, CB?
You know, we need to remember that according to Muslims, the Bible is the word of Allah. Therefore, the question should go farther and say, why Allah even does not protect his book as long as it is his book? Number two, if this book is the word of Allah, and Allah, he sent 124,000 messenger. 100, guys, imagine the number. 124,000 messenger of God, which means there is 124,000 messenger with his book. Because according to Islam, every messenger, he came with a message from God as a book. So Allah sent 124,000 book, all of them get screwed. What's wrong with this God? Imagine Osama. I get you somebody, I say to you, this guy is a champion in chess, or this guy is a doctor, and he made 124,000 surgery, all of them fail except one. What do you want to say about this doctor?
I don't want to see him. You can go to see him, but I don't want to have anything to do with him.
You will not cut your hair, not only to do a surgery, 124,000 surgery, all of them, they fail. And only one succeed. Well, you know what? I'm at a doctor. If I made 124,000 surgery,
to be honest with you, I will not even take my enemy to this doctor because it's not fair. It's not nice.
Not even your mother-in-law. I'm just kidding.
Not even my mother-in-law. My wife would kill me. This is awesome. Anyway, so obviously, here is the question. Obviously, Muslims have no answer. Ladies and gentlemen, if the Muslim would say the Bible has been corrupted, the Bible has been changed, and if we go to the court of law right now, I would take any Muslim to any court of law he chooses in the United States of America, and I'm going to ask him the same four questions. Here's the question I need to ask you, who you claim that the Bible has been changed, the Bible has been corrupted. When the Bible was destroyed, who destroyed the Bible, where it was destroyed, how it was destroyed, why it was destroyed, any of this question, the answer is, we don't know. Then, sir, excuse me, ma'am, don't you dare accuse me, accuse my Bible for being corrupted, for being changed, if you don't have the answer. Because all what you're doing now is you're assuming that my Bible has been changed, you're assuming that my Bible has been corrupted without having any verification. And if you cannot prove it, then you are guilty of lying and guilty of trying to destroy the character of the Bible, which is the Word of God. You have anything to share, CB, before we get to the next challenge here?
You know, always in the court of law, if somebody he made a claim, he is the one who should prove it. And I think this is very clear. Like, if I accuse you of something, I have to take my proof and my document and say, you know what, I have a proof. Now, the Muslims, if they have such a proof, they have to present this proof against their God. Because the one to blame is who? It's not me and you. It is Allah. Allah was exist always, correct? Allah is always exist according to Muslims. He's God. He is the one who can see everything. He is the one who watch everything. And he is the one even who sent that book according to Muslims. So now we should sue Allah, saying, shame on you, Allah. Shame on you. You are the God. You are the one who can stop this. You are the one who can stop us from believing in false books, and you did not do anything. Maybe Allah was taking some marijuana or some cocaine, maybe. He was like high. He did not notice what's going on. This is why it took him 600 years before he wake up and say, hey, Muhammad Abdul, wake up, wake up. We have to send you very fast before it's too late. The Bible is corrupted. The Torah is corrupted. We got nothing there. Take your time.
You make me laugh because on our TV show today, we did a program on NAB or NAB and BNP. What is the name of a TV station we have, Christy? I can't remember the name of it. ABN?
ABN.
ABN, yes. On ABN, one of the thoughts we have there was so amazing that why Allah forgot to fix the problem in Christianity and the lies about Jesus down the cross, and he waited 600 years. How can he explain to me what kind of God this who waits 600 years for a lie about Christianity to spread and take over the whole world, and then he sent Muhammad? Do you have an answer for this?
You know, the only answer that Allah was not there. Maybe he was like maybe going to picnic, maybe. He's doing shopping, or maybe his phone line was cut off, so he could not. Or maybe, you know what, I heard maybe Jibreel, maybe his leg was broken, so at that time he could not come to Muhammad, and he could not.
So Allah waits 600 years, CB, wait 600 years to send another angel. There is plenty of other angels.
I forgot that there's many angels, but you know what? I think the only one who do deliver pizza is Jibreel.
Yeah. I think the problem is there is no answer. And sadly, we've been asking, my dear brothers and sisters who listen to us right now, and those who will be listening to us during the next 2 months on this broadcast, these questions we've been asking now for a long, long, many, 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 many years, and Muslims did not come up with an answer yet. And I don't think they will ever come up with the answer. Anyway, we will move on with the next challenge about the Quran. Muslims claim that the Quran is the perfect word of Allah, never been changed, never been corrupted, and we will respond to it. Listen first to the challenge.
The Quran was recorded in writing as well as in the memory of many people in the lifetime of the Prophet Muhammad and was compiled in book form according to his directions by his companions shortly after his death.
Did you just hear this, CP? He said, Dr. Amir Ali said, the Quran was recorded in writing as well as in the memory. Now the memory is okay. And then he said, of many people of the lifetime of Muhammad, okay? and was compiled in book form. So the Quran was put in a book form according to his direction. So Muhammad told his followers, Muhammad told his people, he directed them how to put the Quran in right what order. Chapter 1 is Al-Fatiha, chapter 2 is the cow, chapter 3 is the family of Imran, chapter 4 is the women, chapter 5. He told exactly what order, how he wants the Quran to be written by his companion. So his companion put the Quran according to his direction shortly after his death. What a wonderful lie, what a wonderful story. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to read to you what's going on. How did the Muslim put the Quran in a written form? I will introduce you to some names here. First one by the name is Umar ibn al-Khattab. In English, we say Umar ibn Khattab. Another guy is Abu Bakr al-Siddiq. Abu Bakr al-Siddiq. And then we're going to go to another gentleman by the name Zayd bin Thabit. Zayd bin Thabit. Now, first of all, Umar ibn Khattab. Umar ibn Khattab, this man became the second Khalifa after Abu Bakr al-Siddiq. Umar ibn Khattab met with Abu Bakr al-Siddiq and he had some discussion with him concerning the gathering of the Quran. The gathering of the Quran. Don't forget, Abu Bakr al-Siddiq, this is the first Khalifa who are right now in the story, led the Muslim people to in their life, in their wars, in their fight and everything. He was the new Khalifa, the political religious leader for the Muslim after the death of Muhammad. After the death of Muhammad. See, he is also the father-in-law of Muhammad. Muhammad was married to his daughter Aisha, which is known Muhammad by Muhammad's favorite wife. She was 6 years old when Muhammad married her, and Muhammad was only a young man with the age of 51 years old. Listen to what took place between Umar and Abu Bakr. Listen carefully, please.
Umar bin Khattab was distressed by the fact that he had been invited to the wars of the apostles. Since these were men who had memorized parts of the Quran, he feared that soon some of the Quran would be lost. He then asked Abu Bakr to commission a collection of the Quran. Abu Bakr sought out Zayd bin Thabit, a close follower of Muhammad, to undertake the task.
Let me explain to you again what happened here. Umar went and met with Abu Bakr. When this took place, that's during the war of apostasy. What is the war of apostasy? That is the first civil war when Muslims were killing the Muslim who left Islam. See, the day Muhammad died, plenty of Muslim people left Islam. They became apostate. And Abu Bakr, as a good Muslim, follower of Allah's Apostle Muhammad, and a good believer, he practiced what Allah teaches in the Quran. As it is written, for example, in chapter 6, verse 151, when Allah in the Quran said that do not kill the soul, which Allah forbid, which is a Muslim soul, except for three causes. Three causes. What are the three causes where it is lawful for Muslim to kill Muslim? Number one, if the Muslim commit adultery. Number two, if the Muslim kill another Muslim. Number three, if a Muslim apostate. Apostate means leave Islam. So, here we go. Bunch of Muslims left Islam, and Abu Bakr, as a good Muslim, he practiced the teaching of Allah in the Quran, and he went in war against them. During this war, many of the reciters of the Quran were killed. Abu Bakr want to continue with the war. Umar ask Abu Bakr, say, hey, you're going to continue this war, we're going to lose the people who memorized part of the Quran. Let me say again, memorized part of the Quran, not the entire Quran. Notice, nothing was written here, as this Dr. Amir Ali, the big lawyer, the big fat lawyer, he said the Quran was written and also people remember it in their memory. No, the Quran was not written. Small portion of the Quran was written, yes, but not the Quran. And nothing was written in a book form as Muhammad asked him to do. This is all of a lie. Now, Abu Bakr and Umar have a big argument because Abu Bakr said, how can I do something the Prophet of Allah never asked me to do? Abu Bakr said, Muhammad never asked me to put the Quran in a written form. I will never do that. Umar said, we must put the book in the Quran in a book form. People who memorize part of the Quran are falling dead. And if we continue to do this, we're going to lose the Quran, which means the Quran was never put in a written form. The Quran was never solid in a book form. After a big discussion, Abu Bakr changed his mind, and then they thought to bring another gentleman, which is Zayd ibn Thabit, and Zayd ibn Thabit took the task to put the Quran in a written form. Listen carefully to the next slide.
Zayd said to him, by Allah, if they had ordered me to shift one of the mountains, it would not have been heavier for me than this ordering me to collect the Quran. Then I said to Abu Bakr, how will you do something which Allah's apostle did not do? Abu Bakr replied, by Allah, it is a good project.
Zayd ibn Thabit thought this is a very hard task. It's a very difficult task. He said, if I will move mountain from one place to another place, it would be easier than to me writing or putting the Quran in a book form. But he also questioned Abu Bakr, the same question which Abu Bakr questioned Umar early. How can we do, how will you do something that which the Allah's Apostle Muhammad did not do? Muhammad never put the Quran in written form in a book. He never asked us to put it in a book form. Why we do that? But Abu Bakr told him, by Allah's will, this will be a great project. Now, here's the question to be. Why do you think Zayd ibn Thabit said it is hard for him to put the Quran in a book form? He said it would be easier to move a mountain than to put the Quran in written form. Go ahead, CB.
Because simply he was afraid that whatever he do, he is not going to do it correctly, because nobody knows exactly what Muhammad said. There is many verses are not found no more, and he was afraid that maybe later, you know, because we knew that the Muslims, they are very violent, he might add a word, add the sentences, forget a verse, and he will be, you know, he will be the one to be accused, because ask yourself, why Uthman, if Uthman is a Sahab, you know, Uthman is a companion, right? This
yeah.
guy is no one. Like, why you are asking this guy when the one who should do it is the one who was always with Muhammad? What about asking Abu Bakr to do it? What about asking to do it, you know? What about asking Ali to do it? Why this guy? Because simply, they have to find somebody. If he made a mistake, they can beat him. They can sacrifice him.
It's not just physical beating. Can you imagine somebody today, even in this world, today, somebody write the Quran and take a verse out or add a verse? You know what will happen? Literally, he or she will lose their head. And you are 100% true, CB. And here I would like to add also that all the system Zayd ibn Thabit was using to put the Quran in a written form, it was so difficult. The materials they were gathering the Quran from, I mean, think about, people have to go to Zayd ibn Thabit, and two have to agree on what the verses says. Well, good luck, because every one of the people have different writing, have different reading, have different verses for the same verse, as we're going to see in a minute, because Muslim who claim there's always been one Quran, and never been changed, and never been corrupted, they're just ignorant. Because as I will show you in a minute, that the Quran in Muhammad days, there were not one Quran, but many. We're going to tell you exactly. Different reading for the same verse. So which verse Zayd ibn Thabit will put in his Quran? Is the verse which Ali said, or the verse which Mustafa said? Is the verse Abdul said, or was the verse of Ramadan said? I mean, people will come to Zayd ibn Thabit with different reading, with different words for the same verse. It's a chaos to please everybody. He will be killed if he did it, and he will be killed if he didn't do it. He will be killed if he had the verse. He will be killed if he did not add the verse. And notice, ladies and gentlemen, the material which Zayd ibn Thabit was gathering from his Quran. Listen carefully. Here it is.
Then they proceeded to collect the Quran from pieces of papyrus, flat stones, palm leaves, shoulder blades, and ribs of animals, pieces of leather and wooden boards, as well as from the hearts of men.
Papyrus, stones, leaves, bones. leather, and board. And the funny thing is the last one, as well as from the heart of men. That is mean from the memory of men. Well, I remember Allah's apostle used to say blah, 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 blah. Okay, do you have another witness? No? Throw it in the trash can. Do you have another witness? Yes. No, Allah's apostle did not say blah, blah, blah. He said blah, blee, blue. Blah, blee, blue is different than blah, blah, blah. Therefore, throw it in the trash can. Oh, here's another verse two people agree on. This is how chaos it was. And that's why it was hard for Zayd ibn Thabit to put the Quran in one book or to write it in a book, as Muslims claim to be the perfect word of Allah. What do you say, CB?
You know, first, we need to remember that the Quran says Allah will make the Muslims forget the Quran. You know?
Absolutely.
He can cause Muslims to forget the Quran. Therefore, then how we can say and depend on the memory of the Muslims when the Muslims are human, like everybody, you know? How a memory can be unless those people who wrote the Quran, they are inspired by God, correct? Like, if they are inspired by God, then we will say, okay, you know what, this is not based on memory of somebody.
That's not what Muslim ever said. They never said. The only one inspired is Muhammad. Nobody else was inspired.
Correct. This is my point. As long only Muhammad is the one who was inspired, and the rest, they are just reporters and writers. Therefore, they are people, they are human like me and you, and they will do forget, and they will, do a mistake. Therefore, Allah depend on a human being to protect the book when already he have a bad experience about corruption? Because remember, as long as Allah, he sent Muhammad to fix the problem, which is what? Which is the corruption of the Torah, the Gospel, and all other the books. You know, if you go in chapter 2, verse number 286, Osama, you will see the chapter there saying, Allah, forgive us if we forgot or we do error. Okay.
Yeah.
The Quran is saying that a human, they have to pray to Allah for forgiveness for what? For forgetting an error.
Yes,
an error, which means in Islam, forgetting is a sin too. Because why you want to ask? Why you want to ask people to be to ask for forgiveness for forgetting if it's not a sin? So if you forget something, it's a sin. In the same time, Muhammad, he said in the Quran, chapter 9, verse number 37, that the forgetting is one of the signs of kuffar. One of the signs of kuffar. This is chapter 9, verse number 37. You can open your open the Quran and see it. Then you will see again that in chapter verse number 18 it says, "If Allah He want, Allah will make you remember, and if you do forget, Allah will make you do forget." Then, and he's talking to Muhammad. In the same time, Osama, I don't want to take. I know you want to continue in this. You know, there's a story proving that the Quran is a very false book. As an example, in Sahih, in Muwatta Malik, book number 30, hadith number 317, it says that the ten seconding, was abrogated by five seconding. I want to challenge the Muslims to show me the 10 seconding verse and the 5 seconding verse. Because when you say that the 10 seconding verse is approved, is abrogated, and it says the word Quran there, by the way, Osama, so the Muslim cannot say it doesn't say Quran. It says, amongst what was sent down of the Quran was the 10 known seconds, make haram. Then it was abrogated by 5 now known seconds. So this means we should find in the Quran what? We should find 2 chapters, one is speaking about 10 seconding and 5 seconding. For those who do not know what we are talking about, according to Muslims, if a Muslim man, he suckles a breast of a woman, she is a stranger for him, this is the only way to sit with her in a private place. So she will give you her breast, you suck at 10 different times, and then you will be lawful to sit with her. But still you can't shake her hand.
Become like a mother-son relationship.
Yeah, but the fact he can marry her later, this is funny, you know. But now we have a problem about the corruption of the Quran. If the Quran says there's 10 saccharin and there's 5 saccharin, I challenge any Muslim to call us right now and show us the Quran verses, the one speak about the 5 saccharin and the 10 saccharin.
They're both gone.
They are gone. So how did they, oh, let me tell you, maybe they forgot Osama, the one who was collecting them?
No, it was actually, yeah, but according to Aisha and the Hadith, these verses was in the Quran until Muhammad died. After Muhammad died, it was still there too. So obviously, yeah, it could be these verses was gone from the, people could not remember them. Yeah, maybe, who knows?
Actually, there's a Hadith of saying that when we were busy with the death of the Prophet, a bit, they don't say what the bit is, it was an animal in the house, mostly it's a goat, did eat the Quran, or some chapters of the Quran. And Aisha, she said that the stoning to death and the suckling is one of those who the goat ate them. So now we knew.
Well, then, Allah's goat ate them, man. We can't help it.
I think that goat, either it's a Jewish goat or a Christian goat. I think we send that goat to do something bad, you know. It must
be Allah's goat. I thought it's Allah's goat. You know, Allah's word and Allah's goat, they can do whatever they want.
It's a Mossad goat.
Oh, man. Anyway, CB, yes, indeed. There are so many verses are no longer exist in the Quran, even though we know from the Hadith 100% these verses were in the Quran. So that's why it was very hard for Zayd ibn Thabit, or anybody, as a matter of fact, doesn't matter, Zayd ibn Thabit or Abu Bakr or Umar or anybody, or Ibn Abbas, Muhammad Qasim, nobody were able to put the Quran right. And listen to this, one of the other reasons why it was hard for Muslims to put the Quran in a book form without any mistake or error, because which Quran Muslim will put in a written form? I mean, the words of Johnny or the words of Mark? You know what I'm saying here? Because there's different reading for the Quran. Muslim who claim that it was only and always one Quran, that's a lie. Even in Muhammad days, listen carefully to what took place here when Muhammad was still alive. Listen carefully.
A man recited a passage of the Quran in the presence of recited for him the Prophet, and he had not corrected him. They carried their dispute to Muhammad. The Prophet endorsed the man's claim. Muhammad then explained, all the modes of reciting are correct so long as you don't turn a statement on mercy into one on wrath and vice versa.
So here we go. Let me explain it to you one more time. Omar, the same guy who argued with Abu Bakr about both in the Quran and written form, he was in the mosque. Imagine me. He's sitting in the mosque, and there was a man reciting the Quran. Reciting the Quran, ladies and gentlemen, means reading the Quran out loud in its poetry form. And you go, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alif Lam Mim, Tilka ayatul kitab al-mubin. As he reciting the Quran, he was reading words wrong, or at least different than the one Omar used to know. So Omar stopped this man and said, whoa, time out. You cannot read the Quran like this. Why? He said, because you're reading wrong. He said, no. I read it before, I recited the Quran before the Apostle of Allah, Muhammad, and he did not correct me. He said, no, you're wrong, because I know this chapter very well. I know these verses very well. And what you said right now is not what is the true word of Allah in the Quran. Anyway, to end the dispute, they both traveled, and when they traveled, they went and met with Muhammad. So Muhammad said, what's wrong? What's going on, guys? What's up? Omar said, hey, this guy is reading the Quran wrong. And the man said, no, Apostle of Allah, I'm reading it right. Because remember, I just recited before you last week, and you did not correct me. He said, okay, you recited. So the man recites the Quran. La, 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 la. And Muhammad said, I was correct. Omar said, he is correct. He said, yes. He said, no, Apostle of Allah, he's not correct. And Muhammad said, why do you think he's not correct? He said, because it's different reading. He said, okay, you Omar, you recite it now, Omar. So Omar said, la la li la 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 li la 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 lu. And Muhammad said, and you Omar are also correct. Omar said, we are both correct. And Muhammad said, yes. As long as you don't turn a statement of mercy into one on wrath or vice versa, you are both good. Your Quran is good and this other guy Quran is good. Boy, oh boy, do we have one Quran or two Quran? I'm not going to stop here. Wait. Hold your thought. Listen to the next piece here. By the way, this comes from Tafsir al-Tabari, and I have a big source here, page 148, 149, Abu Ja'far Muhammad Jibri al-Tabari, and then Tafsir of this comes from Tafsir al-Tabari. So anyway, listen to the rest of the story.
Muhammad disclosed that two angels had come to him. One said, recite the Quran in one form. The other advised Muhammad to ask for more than this. This was repeated several times until finally the first angel said, very well, recite it in seven forms. The prophet said, each of the forms is grace-giving, protecting, so long as you don't terminate a punishment verse with an expression of mercy or vice versa.
I always thought, CB, that Muhammad only met with Angel Jibreel. But in the teaching here, in the Tafsir of Tabari, he told us that Muhammad met with two angels, not one, but two, Jibreel and somebody else, or who knows, maybe two completely different angels. So one of the angels asked Muhammad to recite the Quran, read it out loud, in the beautiful poetry form. So Muhammad read it, and the angel, the second angel, told Muhammad, recite it again in another form. So he did it. And then he said, recite it again. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh form. So Muhammad recites the Quran in complete different seven form. And Muhammad said what? Each of these forms are grace-giving, protecting, as long as you don't terminate a punishment verse into an expression of mercy or vice versa. That means there was not one Quran, not two Quran, but seven Quran, ladies and gentlemen, in Muhammad's days. Now, we're not talking about different dialects. You know, people in the south, they say y'all, and people up north, all of you. No, I'm not talking about y'all, all of you. Okay, I'm talking about different format, different wording. So we must ask the question, if there was always seven Qurans in Muhammad's days, how in the world we end today with one Quran, which is the one Muslim use, at least as they claim they have one Quran? I know you know the answer, CB. Will you share it or you want me to play it? Which one you choose?
You know, play it because the sound will be better.
You know, okay, here is Osman. Let's see, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, what did Khalifa Osman ibn Affan did? Listen carefully.
These variations caused strife among early Muslims. Disputes arose about who had the superior version of the Quran. In response, Caliph Uthman ordered the creation of a single Quran and had all other copies burned.
So Osman ibn Affan, he found a dispute among Muslims. Literally, they were killing each other. I have a better Quran than yours. No, my Quran is better than yours. No. Our Quran is the right one. No. Our Quran. So there were argument, there were disputes, there were fight. Osman ibn Affan was a very smart man. He made the Osmani Quran, which I do carry today, and CB carry today, the Arabic one. Both of us use his Osmani Quran. And guess what? And he burned, let me say again, burned all other copies. I don't know why in the world Muslim people around the world get mad at Dr. Terry Jones for burning a copy of the Quran, a copy in English. It was not even Arabic. I mean, according to Muslim, the English Quran is not Quran. You can use it as a toilet paper if you want to because it's English. You cannot translate the Quran to another language. You know what I'm saying? So, in Islam, it's okay to destroy a piece of paper in English because it's not Arabic. It's not Allah's word. And the whole world got in chaos and got mad and got angry and they want to kill Terry Jones and they want to kill Christian. And they actually killed Christian overseas over the burning of one copy of the Quran in English, which is not Quran. But when Osman ibn Affan burned the original Qurans, the one which Muhammad read by his own lips, recited by his own lips, Why in the world nobody got mad at Osman ibn Affan? Answer me, CB. Please answer me.
You know, when somebody, he said that I have 7 Quran, and Allah, he sent the 7 Quran, Osama. Now, who is Osman ibn Affan who have the authority to destroy 6 Qurans of Allah? You know what I mean? If Allah himself decides he want to send 7, so Osman, is he correcting Allah's mistake? Like, did he find that Allah, he made a mistake when he sent him 7? Because Allah never said, destroy the other 6 and keep 1. This is number one issue. Number two, why Allah anyway is sending it in 7 Arabic dialect? What about sending it in 7 languages? Send it in Chinese. 1 copy in Latin. The other one in, Japanese. The other one is whatever, you know, like 7. Who is going to benefit from 7 Quran? All of them, they are speaking Arabic. And each one of them is saying the same thing, but in different dialect. It's a stupid idea. If all of them, they understand the same language, and all of them, they use the same language, so why I need to send it in 7 dialects to people?
You know what, CB, you know what I believe about why Muhammad did have 7 different Qurans? I believe this is because, obviously, Muhammad was never able to memorize the entire Quran himself. For he was an older man. I mean, he's in his 50s, he's in 60s, and he's still making up new verses. We're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, 23 years. Muhammad claimed to be a prophet when he was 40, and then he continued to give this revelation, the verses of the Quran, until he turned 63. That's 23 years. 3 of these years, he did not write any verses. That's when Waraka ibn Nawfal died, and maybe CB can fill us in more about the story. But during these years, Muhammad used to sit with people, you know, sit on the ground, on the floor, and people sit and talk. And Muhammad said, Allah's verses said, blah, 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 blah. And guess what? 10 years later, he sits with another group of people, tells them about the same chapter, the same verses, and he forgot 2 or 3 of the words. He put them different. So he said, blah, blah, blee, blah, 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 blue, blah, 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 blah. So he said the lee and the loo. If you remember, the first one I did not mention lee or loo, but now we have lee and loo. So Muhammad adds words to the Quran. And that's exactly the same problem the first man who was reciting the Quran before Omar. Omar said, you cannot say Lee and Lu. It has to be blah, 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 blah. He said, no, Muhammad, the Apostle of Allah, told me blah, 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 blee, blah, 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 blue, blah, blah, blah. So when you have different words, and Omar and this man argue, and they went to Muhammad, Muhammad said, they're both good. I believe as Muhammad continued to teach his Quran, recite it before his people, he continued to make up different words for the same story. And guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking about only about the days of Muhammad. We're talking about even the Quran we have today in our hand. The one Osman ibn Affan gave to us, when you read the story of the Quran as it is repeated, and I promise you, by God's will, we will show you all this error in the Quran. This radio broadcast will take forever to cover all what we need to teach you, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to open the Quran, and we're going to show you that the story of Moses, or the story of Noah, or the story of Adam, or the story of whatever, is repeated throughout the Quran, the same story, and Muhammad makes so many mistakes, because I show you the same story repeated in different chapters in the Quran, even the one we have today, and guess what? Some of the words in one chapter is completely different than the other word in the other chapter for the answer to the same question. So Allah will tell Noah, did you do blah, blah, blah? And Noah will answer, yes, I did blah, blee, blah, blue, blah, blah. And another place, Allah will ask the same question, Noah, did you do blah, blah, blah? And Noah will say, yes, na, 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 ni, na, la, da, loo. Wait a minute, different words. For the same question, did Noah say blah, 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 or la, blee, la, loo, la, la? You see what I'm saying here? I wish you guys know Arabic so we can open the Quran and give you an example. I hope what I'm saying here is not funny, but what I'm saying is, even in the Arabic Quran we have today, the stories is repeated in the Quran, and every time Muhammad forget and put different answers. For the seven Qurans, in my opinion, CB, it was one Quran, but Muhammad forgot so many times, and he put different words for different stories. It's not just dialogue. I'm talking about different words as what we have today in our hands, in the Arabic Quran of Osman ibn Affan. What say you, CB?
I want to show you a different example, Osama. If we go to chapter 5, verse 105, I'm going to quote from Musnad Ahmad a hadith which is correct, approved and corrected and approved by all Muslim scholars. It says that when Abu Amir, he was reading that chapter, which as mentioned, it is chapter 5, verse 105. He did read the chapter and he forgot to mention the word kuffar. He did read as the following. يا أيها الذين آمنوا عليكم أنفسكم ولا لا يضركم من من يضركم من ضل إذا اهتديتم. Muhammad, he gets so angry and he screamed at him and said, where is the word kuffar? He said, and where you went with يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا يضركم من ضل من الكفار إذا اهتديتم, which means there's a word is missing. It is a kuffar. So Muhammad gets so angry because that word does not exist. And guess what? It's not exist in the Quran today.
Somebody took it out.
It's amazing.
That's what I was trying to say, CB, to our audience. And obviously, most people are listening to us right now. They do not speak Arabic. And the word infidel exists in one verse. No. In Muhammad days, he argued with somebody concerning the word kuffar, which means infidel, was not in the verse because the man recited the verse without mentioning this word. And Muhammad got mad at him. But if we open the Quran today, we still see the same verse without the same word, which means if Muhammad is alive today, he will be mad too about all the Muslim people who are not literally taking his word religiously with all respect, without taking word out of it or added to it. And it's amazing. It's amazing, CB. As we will continue in this podcast in the future, when we talk about the stories of the prophets and how, which is, by the way, it is my new book, the book we are about to publish sometime within next month or two after we move CB book out. Within we're going to get our end, which is called The Revelation of Error Concerning the Story of the Prophets. And we will show you how much error is in the Quran. It is unbelievable, the level of error throughout the Quran concerning the stories of the prophets, which the stories which Muhammad copied from the Bible and he put into the Quran. Anyway, well, our time is about to be up, so I'll let you say whatever you want to say, CB, and then we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will still, you have a opportunity to ask questions. And if you do not ask question, me and CB will just continue talking. We have no problem to talk. I see there is one caller here, and I don't know if this somebody needs to come in right now, Christy, or you want to take it after the break.
Maybe she's talking to him. I don't know.
Let me check in with them, and I'll see if they want to come in after the break. And if you want to go ahead and go to break now, we'll do it.
All right,
we
can do that.
Okay.
CB, you want to share something before we go to the break?
No, we'll continue after the break. No problem.
All right. We will go to a break, and when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we would love to open the phone for anybody to call. Our number is 347-857-1380.
If you'd like to call and ask your question, call 347-857-1380. Phone lines are open now. Call 347-857-1380. Revealing the truth about Islam. We'll be right back, right after this short break. Welcome back to Revealing the Truth About Islam with your hosts, Usama Dakdok and Christian Prince.
Phone lines are open now.
If you'd like to call and ask your question, call 347-857-1380.
Well, welcome back. It's my joy to be with you in one more episode. And believe it or not, it is only 30 minutes for, actually 29 minutes from closing our time on this show. And as we given the telephone number, I would like to give it to you one more time. It is 347-857-1380. Please, if you have any question, do not hesitate to call us. Please call us right now. We have the next 29 minutes to answer all your questions, especially our dear Muslim brothers and sisters. If you have a question on this topic, we're talking about the Bible, has the Bible been corrupted? Is the Quran infallible as well? And or any other topic, it doesn't matter. If you have any question about anything, don't feel free to call or don't hesitate to call. I know we have a caller here, 205, a caller with the area code 205. We tried to hear you a minute ago and we could not hear you, but let's try it again. If you don't mind, Christy, bring him in. We may be able to hear his question.
Okay, I already talked to him. He's just wanting to listen to the program on the phone. So he didn't have a question.
Yeah, That's wonderful. We're thankful for the person who are 205 to call us, and we're glad that you are with us. We hope and pray that you're enjoying this this show, this broadcast. And if you have any questions in the future, do not hesitate to call us. The line is open one more time. The number is 347-857-1380. If you have any question, please do not hesitate to give us a call. CD, we were talking about the Quran and how many Quran are there in Muhammad days? Not two, but seven. And Osman ibn Affan, he was a smart man, he was a wise man, and he was able to remove the dispute, the argument, the fight between Muslims for who believe, who have the superior version. People always bragging about what they got. It doesn't matter what you got is bad or good. You know, my car is better than your car. My house is bigger than your house. Whatever I got is better than you. And that's exactly what it was in Muhammad, in the early Muslims, those who believe in Muhammad, the early Muslims, after Muhammad died, they were bragging about who have a better Quran. Osman ibn Affan fixed it one time for good by he burned all the Qurans and he made his own one, the Osmani Quran, which is the one we still use until today. What a wonderful way to keep the original copy of the Quran. No, They burn it. Go ahead, CB.
We have a problem in here because what you are saying and what everybody heard and understand with the proofs and reference you gave, that it is the Muslims who collect the Quran and specifically by the orders of Uthman. But isn't it the Quran says that Allah, He said that He is going to collect the Quran? Can you read for me, Usama, from your book, please? Chapter 75, verse number 17.
Chapter 75 and verse 17. Chapter 75 and I'm getting into it. Just give me a minute. Chapter 75 and verse
17.
I moved up all the way, but I'll get it. I promise you.
No problem.
My computer is jumping all over the place.
Yeah, I will read for those who, until you open your translation, we can read from the translation of Yusuf Ali. Allah is saying, it is for us to collect it and to say it, to pronounce it, to proclaim it. Who's saying that?
Here it is. I got the verse, brother. He said, surely it is its collection and its reciting is on us. So Allah is telling us here that it is Allah's job to collect the Quran and it's Allah's job to recite the Quran. Absolutely. So obviously it was not Abu Bakr or Omar or anybody to do such a thing.
It is Allah. And Allah, you know, I want to ask the Muslims, why Allah did not practice what He promised when He say, it is my duty on me to collect it and to recite it. Now, he did not first recite it because Muhammad, he never heard the Quran from Allah. He heard it from the guy, his name is Jibreel. Allah never recited the Quran to Muhammad. This is number one lie, a mistake. Number two, all the Muslims agree and admit that the one who collect the Quran, it is Uthman ibn Affan. This is why actually it's not called Quran. It's called Mus'haf Uthman, not the Quran. It's called Mus'haf Uthman, which means the pages of Uthman. So this verse proven again that Allah is a false God. Because if Allah, he is God and he made a promise, what that will happen? What the promise will mean? It means the promise will be done. Correct, Usama? If God, he made a
Absolutely.
Promise, says, I am going to collect it, it means nobody should collect the Quran. He said he will collect it. It means he is going to give us a printed book. How Allah is going to collect the book? He has to make it a book. Because you cannot collect it without making it a book. You
it's
collect
very
it.
Neat point, Tibi. Very neat point. You know, I never thought of it this way, but I'm thankful to have you with me in this this broadcast. I'm learning from you as we go here. It's awesome to see that here is a verse in the Quran. I translated by my own hand, but I never thought of it this way. Sometimes, you know, you read something and you translate it without thinking in depth. Here, Allah, chapter 75, verse 17, tell us, it is Allah's job to collect the Quran, and it's Allah's job to recite the Quran. But Umar wanted to work on it. Abu Bakr wanted to work on it. Zayd ibn Thabit wanted, he did it. And Osman ibn Affan redoing it. And who knows what else?
So now, you know, if Allah is the one who is going to collect it, and Allah is the one who will recite it, then we need to ask another question. Who need Muhammad anyway? Who need Muhammad? You know? If Allah is going to recite it, we do not need a middleman. We do not need a prophet.
Yeah.
Allah himself, he will recite it to whom? To the people.
Mm.
But Allah never did. We never. I challenge any Muslim to show me one time that they heard Allah speaking. He did not even talk to Muhammad. Therefore, everything in Islam is a false claim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have a caller, CB. We have a caller, and I don't know if Christy would introduce the next caller to see who is he or she. It's another caller number 503, area code 503. Are you there, Christy?
Yes.
Can you introduce the next caller, Floss, please?
Maybe he's not ready yet. Anyway, when she is ready, she can, you know. There's a verse in the Quran, Usama, it says, يَمْحُ اللَّهُ مَا يَشَّى. What يَمْحُ mean, Usama?
Hey, we got our caller. I want to ask our caller to call back. We just lost him. He was just going to come on. I think it was Eddie A. Eddie, call us back. Eddie A, call us back.
Okay.
So all right.
Mean,
very, very important. Yamhu means remove, means cancel, means delete, also erase. All these words have the same meaning. Yes.
Okay. The verse in chapter 13, verse number 39, it says, Allah is going to erase, and you can read your translation, I don't know how it's coming in your translation, erase or delete whatever he wants from the book. Now, give me one reason that Allah himself want to delete his words. Give me one reason.
Yeah. the reason is Allah is not God.
Yeah, because if you are the one who sent this book, and you are the one who sent me this chapter, why you want to delete it? Like, was it wrong? You found a mistake with it? Like, are you sorry?
We know from reality, CB, kings, when kings say a word, they don't change their mind. Kings never change their mind. When a king give a word, it's too late. It, even if it caused his own children's life. And we read this in the Bible. We know this from history. But in the case of Allah in the Quran, it's okay to change his mind. He told me it's chapter 13 and verse 39?
39, yes.
Okay, here we go. Allah erase, as the word I use here, erase what he will and confirm. and with him is the mother of the book. Allah has the mother of the books, but he can erase what he wants and he confirm what he wants. Wonderful. Isn't that wonderful? Go ahead, Christy. I believe your brother Eddie is with us. Please bring him into the show.
Okay. Hello. Are you there, Eddie A? Is that
yes,
you?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry, I lost you.
I got scammed.
Uh-oh. Well, you
hey,
go right ahead.
We'll give you some money back.
President Eddie, we'll give you some money back. We'll give you $25 back. That's okay.
That was a crazy deal.
Yes.
Anyhow, hello. God bless you both. A good show. And I was just wondering, you're talking about the Quran and the authors of it and how it was changed a few times. I'm wondering today, you read about these Shias and the Sunnis killing each other over their different beliefs. Now, are they believing the same words exactly, or are they using different Qurans?
Well, I will answer about that. The Sunni, the Shia, they have they share almost the same Quran, except the Shia, they have what it's called Surat al-Nurain, which is a chapter of al-Nurain, and al-Wilaya. And the Muslim Sunni, they don't accept those, because those they will give like the right for the mullahs of the Shia to become who they are. But in the same time, they read the same book, but the Shia, they believe in something that's called outside and inside, which means the Shia, they believe that the Quran, let us say there's a verse, the Muslim and Sunni and Shia both agree about it. The Muslim Sunni, they take the outside meaning. The Muslim Shia, they take the inside meaning, which means they believe that the verse have inside and have outside. For the Shia, what is important is the inside. Now, the inside, the Shia, they play with it far away from what the mean is about. To the point, you know, I have a debate in the other day. A Shia guy, he called me, and he was telling us, Osama, about that Allah, he created the first person who created in this earth, it was Muhammad. And at that time, he was a light. And then he created from his light the whole world. And his family, they are light too. And when Muhammad, he came to this earth, Muhammad, he became like the human being of Muhammad is just a jacket. This is how the Shia, they see it. So they take the world exists in the Quran, which it says, Sirajan, you know, Sirajan Mubiyan. So Siraj, which means a lamp. So Allah in the Quran says Muhammad is a Siraj. Therefore, Muhammad must be light. And that can be exist in chapter 33, verse number 46. So what the Shia said, they take the inside meaning, and the Sunni, they say, no, this is about that he is going to bring the light of Islam, or the majority of them, they say it this way. The Shia, all of them, they say that Allah saying that Muhammad is a siraj, which means a lamp, and a light to light to the world. Therefore, there is inside meaning. Muhammad is a light, and he is the light of the world. And he is not a human like us. He is made from light, and they created a lot of stories around this this verse. And this is chapter 33, verse number 46. So the Sunni and the Shia, they might read the same verse, but they have total two different understanding and belief.
It's easy to do about the Quran. There's a lot of stuff that's hard to understand.
Yeah.
Well, brother Eddie, this is Islam, and we can't help it. This is the Quran, and we can't help it. That's why one of the amazing things when you read the interpretation of the verses of Allah in the Quran by Muslim scholar, it's amazing when you read their interpretation. They always, no kidding, they always many. I don't know what is the percentages, but huge number, 90%+ Muslim scholar would say they would begin their interpretation by saying, scholar disagree, and they always ended with the statement, Allah knows best. اختلف العلماء والله أعلم. اختلف العلماء means scholar disagree. Allah أعلم means Allah knows best. And that's how Muslims understand the Quran, that they disagree about what it means, and Allah knows, only Allah knows best. And that's how, by the way, the verse I have here, Christian Prince, in my translation, it said, a caller to Allah with the permission and a lighted lamp. A lighted lamp means Siraj al-Munir. Yeah, lighted lamp. So obviously, if Muslim Sunni take this to be that Islam will be the light, but the Shia would say that Muhammad will be the light, and he is a light, lighted lamp, and who knows?
You know, and here, there's something else, by the way, because when the Shia say that Muhammad is the light, and the Quran says that Allah is the light of the universe, of the world. This means Muhammad and Allah. Because if Allah, if Allah is light, and Muhammad is light, and
they're both Allah,
they are both Allah, and you know, and you know, the funny, like, how somebody can believe that this man who have sex, like I asked the Shia guy, I have his debate, I can play it. I asked him, okay, Muhammad was a light, but he was having sex with Aisha. How? Is that a light in sex, or like what? And how you explain to me light having sex, light having orgasm, light? What light? You know, how? What is that it's talking about? And at the same time, Osama, here we see the hypocrisy of Muslims. They reject Jesus because he have a body of a man, right? And at the same time,
yeah,
they have no problem to accept Muhammad to be a man, and he's the light. He's the light of the world, and light in here in a physics mean, which means this is his nature. He is a light, not a metaphorical meaning. Because some people, they might say, oh, it's just about, you know, like it's mean that he is the one who brought guidance. And by the way, Osama, and here, there's another mistake. If Allah is saying a caller for Allah by his permission and a light, a lamp and a light. Okay, this is mean Muhammad by himself is a light and a lamp, not by the Quran.
Absolutely. Yep, if you take it literally, that's what the Quran says.
Yeah, because the verse should say, and we send you the Quran as a light. This is would be correct. But you say that Muhammad is a light, it means Muhammad is the Quran himself. Because who is Muhammad being a light? He is the word of God? No, he's just a messenger. So how the messenger will be the light himself? He is a lamp. I want people to be careful. He is a lamp and a light, not only a light. So he is the lamp. And when we say he is a lamp, what does that mean? It means the source of light is coming from where? From Muhammad himself and from Allah.
In my translation, I put it, and a lighted lamp, Surajan Munir. So it is a lamp, and the light is shine in it. It's not just a lamp, but a lighted lamp.
Right.
And of course, the Bible, by the way, Muhammad is taking this from the Bible. There's so many of the symbol words here and there because the Bible said the word of God is a lamp to our feet, a lamp to our feet. So the God word, the Bible, the book of Psalms talking about the book, the word of God is a lamp to our feet, is a light to our feet. Through the word of God, the true word of God, we can see where we're going. It is the map which we use to live. Without the word of God, the Bible, we will get lost. We will not know where we're going and where we where is the next step. But Muhammad here calling himself in the Quran, he is a lighted lamp. And I don't know what to tell you. What kind of lighted lamp will live in darkness? And the man life, Muhammad's life, from his birth to until his death, he was a sinful man living in darkness. All the evil things which no one can do in the light, Muhammad did it in the middle of the day. I mean, people would do it in secret, like committing adultery, like killing, like all this wickedness and sinfulness he have in his life. He did it in the middle of the day. And he actually wrote in the Quran that Allah gave him permission to do so. I mean, it's unbelievable how wicked this man was, how sinful Muhammad was, and here he's calling himself in the Quran, he is a lighted lamp.
And you know, Osama, we can support that Muhammad is a light, which means the Shia was right about the understanding of this verse. Do you know why? If we go to chapter 5, verse 15, you can you know, take your time to open your translation. Chapter 5, verse 15. You will see Allah saying, and we sent to you, or we came to you from Allah, with the light and the book. So the book cannot be the light.
No, that's two separate things. You're right.
You know, chapter
You're
5.
Right.
So he sent down, we came to you with the light and the book. So the Muslim,
I got it here, Stevie.
Yeah.
Chapter 5, verse 15. O people of the book, indeed our messenger came to you to clear up much that you were hiding from the book. and pardons you much indeed. A light and a clear book come to you from Allah. So light is one thing, clear book is a separate thing, and they both come to the people of the book from Allah.
Therefore, Muhammad is a real light, and the Shia understanding is more accurate from the Sunni understanding. Because if it is the light, is the same as the book, Allah will not say, and light,
yes,
and the book. And by the way, in here, there's a mistake. Because when you say, I send a book, but we did not receive a book here, Muhammad, he received verses. Does that mean Muhammad, he didn't deliver a book, and he was hiding it, and he was giving us a chapter here and there? Because the Quran, Allah, he sent down a book, and you cannot say a book if it's a chapter by chapter or verse by verse. Unless the Quran books. Correct?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And it's amazing thing, Brother Eddie, while we have you on the phone with us, that the Shi'i look at the Sunni as they are all infidel and they are all going to burn in hell. And the Sunni look at the Shi'i as they are all infidel and they are all burn in hell. And I don't know. They hate to each other too much. They be killing each other from the days of Ali and Abu Bakr, from the beginning of the first split in Islam. And Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. I hope you got the answer for your question, Brother Eddie.
You sure did. And thank you all three for all of your beautiful work. Really appreciate it. God bless you all. Thanks so much.
God bless you. Thank you. It's always good to hear your voice, brother.
Give my best wishes to your wife and son. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll sure will share this with them. Thanks a lot. God bless you, brother.
Osama, I want to take you. I want you to take a note about this verse. I want to give you chapter 5, verse 44. Chapter 5, verse 44. This is an extreme dangerous verse. Why? Because this verse saying
544. Okay.
Yeah. In this verse, it says that Allah, He sent the Torah, and the rabbis and the monks, they do practice by what they memorize of it. And from what? From the book of Allah. Which means in here, we have two things. We have the rabbi memorizing the Torah. And remember, the Muslim, they say, how come nobody can memorize anything? And here, Allah, that the rabbis are memorizing. Therefore, that, and this is where? This is in the time, time of Muhammad, because this verse came in the time of Muhammad. So
that means 600 years after Christianity, CB. Let people know that here is the date. That 600 years after Christ, when Muhammad was alive, there were rabbis, there were Jews who memorized the book, and they do have the book in their hand.
But read with me, Osama, what the verse there is saying. That Allah is saying that they do by Allah book. They are working by Allah book, and that in the time of Muhammad, which means that the rabbi must be having the correct information, the correct memory about the Torah, and they are doing it perfectly. Because how you say they are following the book when they are not? How you say they are memorizing the book if the book is gone? So,
the name itself, Sidi, all over the Quran, you read about Ahlul Kitab, the people of the book, the people of the book. You cannot be called Abu Caleb, like myself, unless you have a son by the name Caleb. You cannot be whatever name unless the name fit you. So when the Quran calls us the people of the book, how can we are called until Muhammad days, that 23 years after Christ, Muhammad is calling us the people of the book if we do not have the book? I mean, how can he be called he should say the people of the lost book, the people of the corrupt book, the people of the whatever, but you cannot call me the people of the book unless I truly do have the book and it is correct. Ahl al-Kitab means the people of the book. So the name Muhammad gave to us throughout the Quran is a great evidence that the Bible was correct and the Christian and the Jew have done everything to protect it, because he never say in the Quran the people of the corrupt book or the people of the destroyed book or the people of the lost book or whatever.
You know, the thing is, why until now we did not get one Muslim call, Osama, for 4 months?
Because you are so mean, you need to change your attitude towards my Muslim friends. You scare the daylight out of them, and nobody would like to call us. Maybe, if you close your eyes and you don't talk, they will call us.
Should we change the show name and call it Muta Show, and then we can, might get some calls,
yeah,
maybe?
Also, maybe if you give gifts, like you offer your book for free, here is the deal. If any Muslim call us from now on in our show, any Muslim will call us, no kidding, I will send them a copy of my Quran for free, especially those who cannot read Arabic, because I believe my Quran will help them a lot. Any Muslim will call us in our show, I will give him my Quran for free. Are you going to offer your book for free, sir?
I cannot. I'm very poor, man.
No,
yeah, but you know, Osama, can I hang up and call and I will get the Quran for free? I'm just kidding.
Actually, you have to be a Muslim caller, not you. I said a Muslim caller. You're so smart, CV.
Actually, Osama, just to tell people in here, he's a very, very generous man. He sent me the Quran for free. I did not pay for the copy I had in my house. He sent it for me.
Okay, do you need another copy? Just get the bottom of it. Do you need another copy? I'll send you two more. How much you need?
No. No, thank you very much. Actually, you know, I have it in here for a reason, because when I use in my book, I want to see your translation and put it in my book. Otherwise, you know, I do not need really to read translation because, you know, I speak Arabic.
Brother, yes. It is our joy to put the deception of Allah out. And I hope and I pray, don't hold on it for a week now. I need you to respond back to me within 2 days, the most,
yes.
Because the people in the print shop, they're waiting to put the ink on the pages. So don't hold me, please. Okay?
No, I will not. Actually, I cannot wait, me myself, to have the book. And a lot of people, they are waiting, asking me when we will have it, you know?
Yeah, I know, because actually us also, we're going to put it on what do you call this, not Google, what do you call this book?
Amazon.com.
Amazon, it's going to be on Amazon, and it's going to be also on our website, and we're going to do everything we can to get this book out as far as we can go, east and west, north and south. So you need to get busy to get your second book. And Christy Johnson, when are we going to do your book, Christy? Sometime next year or the following year?
Yeah, right. No, we're going to have it out here pretty soon. We're wrapping it up shortly.
Right.
I have to do all my own editing, so I don't have all that help. Anyway, we're getting ready to close out, guys.
If you want
proof, right. CB. Say your goodbye, CB. There's only 2 minutes left.
2 minutes left. Well, I don't like to say goodbye. I cry sometimes, you know.
Anyway. Love you, brother. Just go ahead. See you next week.
Thank you again for Brother Osama, because without his help, I will not have my book out. So I appreciate this man. May the Lord bless him and his family and everything he do. For he is a great man and he's a great brother. And thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you, guys.
God bless you all. We'll see you next week. I'm going to meet with you next Saturday. Keep us in your prayer. And God is good. God bless you.
Yes, everybody. Thank you. Thank everybody in the chat room. We had a great night tonight and lots of participation in there. Well, God bless everybody in the chat room and listening to us online, Facebook and Pal Talk. And we just enjoy our time with you. Hope you're learning a lot. God bless.
You've been listening to Revealing the Truth About Islam, where we broadcast the light of Jesus Christ into the darkness of Muslim hearts. Join us right here each and every Saturday from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. And remember, guide us to the straight way, and Jesus is the way.